Okay, welcome to the podcast for empathy and imagination. This is the podcast where we learn to empathize and imagine with you, ourselves, and our special guest. My name is Aubrey.
And I'm Drew Clark.
And our special guest today is Mr. Owen Dockham.
Hey, good to be here.
Thanks for being here. And thank you very much to our listeners. Welcome.
All right.
Okay.
Here we are, episode 10.
We're ready.
It's kind of a milestone.
Yeah.
I think say that every episode.
But we're doing good, I feel. I feel like this is working out.
Doing good work here.
Cool. So we got some fun topics. We got an awesome guest. We have a garden update and, of course, a word from our fun sponsors, Final Corp.
Oh, yeah. You want to do garden update.
Garden update.
What do we got this week, Drew?
So basically the flowers are taking over. The nasturtium have doubled in size since our last podcast.
The what?
The nasturtium. Nasturtium.
What is that?
It was those big green pads with the orange and yellow flowers coming out. They are way bigger. And with that big storm we had, actually pushed over a few of the longer kale plants. But that's great because they don't die when they fall over. What happens is they fall over and then vertical stalks grow along the horizontal stalk. Mm. And so more kale is produced for chewing or gifting.
As long as it doesn't like fall on top of something that's already growing.
Right. If it's smooshing your strawberries, then that's not so great. But essentially, the garden is... we also added some barriers to the compost. Got like a much more robust compost castle situation. If you can see over in the corner there, we'll add some photos.
Yeah, we'll put some photos of that on the web zone.
And it's really... another last little thing for the garden update is the kale is starting to flower. I can see the leaves are getting narrower and spindlier. We have the little beginning of the bud seed starting and some of the flowers happened. A lot of people cut that off and continue eating the kale, but I like to let some or most flower so that the seeds drop and new kales are formed and I don't even have to buy new ones.
Hmm.
So I think that's been the garden update.
Garden update. Thanks for listening. Oh, there was one before we get to Owen. We'll get to you eventually.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I'm being empathetic and patient.
Yeah, about an hour and a half, I'll get to you.
And I love kale. That's how long it's going to take me to drink this IPA.
I wanted to remind you, Drew, about a little wager we had.
Oh.
Back in the month of February.
I think I remember it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe remind our studio listeners for the first time?
Aubrey and I had a little friendly wager. We were like, hey, I wonder who can... I forget what it was, but I remember that the... Super Bowl, that's right. It was a sports match.
What's that?
So, for our listeners who aren't aware, Super Bowl...
The big game.
Yeah, the big American football sports match. Aubrey and I were hanging out and streaming it. And we're like, okay, if quote, the team I'm rooting for wins, then I get a song... made for me, about me, from Aubrey. But it turned out that my team lost, so I now have the opportunity to make Aubrey a song kind of about him.
Yeah, like a theme.
That was like the theme, idea. Yeah. I'm excited about that, and I've got some possibles I've been working on, but, you know, okay. It's not...
I'll remind you every now and again.
Yeah.
Just didn't want you to forget.
You're going to like it.
Good. So, Mr. Owen.
Mr. Owen.
How about,
what's up, guys?
Would you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself?
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
Oh.
Maybe just a quick overview, like...
Yeah.
Where you're from.
Yeah. The deets.
The deets. So, California guy here. Grew up in North San Juan.
Oh, you're from here?
Yeah, well... Grass Valley, Nevada City. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the landmark I tell people. But I'm from the Ridge.
The Ridge.
The Ridge.
Sounds badass.
On the other side.
They grow cannabis in North San Juan.
Never heard of that before. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a canned good.
Very beautiful place to grow up and call home. I now reside in Berkeley. I enjoy animals, music, and... physical activity and exercise.
I understand you play in a band?
Yeah. I do. played some piano, some Korg and Rhodes with this guy here, Aubrey, in a band called Giant Electric Spider. Newer project. We just started, what, 6 months ago or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have our first show next week at the Oakland Music Complex, Thursday night, 9:30 p.m.
That's right. Congratulations.
Sounds good. And, yeah, I mean, we'll get to more details, cool. I'm sure, yeah. in a bit, but that's the general me.
Your specialties are music, physical exercise, and being from a beautiful place.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy simplicity. I consider myself a minimalist in many ways. Music and good company.
For our listeners, so they know, he has also a beautiful beard. I mean, a lovely, lovely, stalwarthy American man beard.
We got a couple of beards in this room right now.
I do know how to change a tire and chop down a tree. Oof, just okay. for all you Sheesh. Haters out there.
Wow, nice. I,
you know, this beard is not deserved.
There's been some talks of beards being unwelcomed because
right,
yeah,
it's so hipster.
Yeah, it's it's a very trendy.
But
thing.
I can change. I've changed an engine, so I mean, you know, hey. It's okay.
Yeah.
Well, my girlfriend's threatened to break up with me if I shave. So
can't do that.
Yeah. I love you, honey.
What dogs?
what are your dogs?
What dogs do you have? What pets do you have?
So right now we've got a fuzzy family of two pit bulls, Sophie and Luna, and Darwin the cat, who happens to also be blue. He's a Russian blue. Mm. This all happened by coincidence. Luna was my first pup.
All your pets are blue?
All of them. Silver blue, yeah. But Lucy, my other half, my better half, had Darwin. And then we met, and then Darwin and Luna met. And now we're all a big, happy family.
Cool. Isn't that nice?
And we adopted Sophie, this little fireball. Hmm. She's sweet. But yeah, she's also blue-nosed pit bull.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the oldest animal?
I think Darwin's, we don't know. Darwin was just this bum cat walking around the streets of Lafayette, Indiana, and Lucy found him when she was living there. So we don't know, but yeah, he's probably about 7 or 8, 72 in dog years, cat years.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, it's good.
Cool.
It's a good situation.
Oh, I had a comment from my mom.
Oh, let's hear the.
She didn't comment on the site, but she verbally commented to me.
Okay, let's hear it.
She said that sometimes we sound far away.
From the microphones?
I presume that's what she meant. I mean, my answer was, yeah, well, you're in Boston. We're in San Francisco. We are far away, Mom. But, yeah, that was her comment. So we do have one confirmed listener.
Hey! So I think you and I count as listeners, too, because I listen to the show.
Yeah. I have earplugs in right now. I can't hear anything.
Okay, future Drew, when you're listening to this later, know that I was thinking of you now.
Yeah, send him a postcard. Future Drew. You're a nutritionist. Is that right? Is that your area of expertise?
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, in the state of California, everyone can just call themselves a nutritionist, really. So technically, I'm a nutrition consultant.
That's the trade you parlay?
Yeah.
Is the schooled title?
Bowman. I went to Bowman in Berkeley. There's a couple other campuses, one in Boulder, Santa Cruz, and Petaluma.
Wow.
Dr. Ed Bowman. And it's his school. Holistic Nutrition and Culinary Arts. So I went through their 18-month program.
Oh, wow. So would you cook things?
I do. I mean, that wasn't part of the curriculum, but I fancy the Food Network and call myself an amateur chef. Definitely.
Lovely. So being a nutritionist, what does that mean you do with that? What would you do with that?
So I'm also a high intensity strength trainer. And I'd say that's my main gig here. So that's what I do. I help people in 20 minutes once a week get really strong and healthy. So it's great for busy people. It's a very science-based approach to strength training. But
are you very strong?
You know, I'm happy where I'm at right now.
That's
I'm
great.
Stronger as a 33-year-old than I've ever been in my life. So compared to what? I don't know. But compared to my 20-year-old self, yes, I'm quite strong now.
Could you explain why, like, your genuine interest, your kind of internal pursuit of nutrition, like why do that? Why do you care about it? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, let me just take a sip of my beer real quick.
That was going to be one of my questions too.
Yeah, can you sip your beer? Oh no. Okay.
Well, I could talk about this for hours, I suppose, but I mean, I've always been drawn to good food and nature. I grew up just climbing trees in the mom's garden, and that's how I was raised, eating good quality food from the earth. Not a lot of processed stuff. But when I was 10, I had Lyme disease. I was bit by tick. Found it, and completely paralyzed, debilitated. I was crawling to the bathroom as a little poor, I think, actually it was between third and fourth grade, so maybe I was 8 or 9. I mean, it sucked. Plain and simple.
Was that the kind of trigger moment? The decisive moment where you decided that you were going to pursue nutrition? Or
no, actually not at all.
There such a moment?
No, I don't think so. And I think when people say that and they're like, yeah, what was the, maybe there are these determining moments in the blink of an eye. But for me, it's just been a gradual progression of what I've, trial and error, I am good at and what I enjoy doing. And I enjoy helping people feel better.
Now, your strength training, do you also include nutritional advice?
Yeah, so that's kind of, I include nutrition coaching per se with my already existing students. I don't call them clients usually. I call them students. We're all learning, right? So I'm still learning. But the people I work with that generously pay me to have them experience pain, that will behoove them later. thank you, guys. I love you all. thank you.
Great.
Thank you for putting food on my table. I mean, I lost my train of thought a little bit, but
that's so great.
Do you do nutritional coaching as part of your?
That's part of my business.
Training?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a secondary service I offer with clients. That's what I was going to say, is that the best exercise program will not get you results if the nutrition's not essentially dialed in somewhat, but depending on what the goals are, the age, the activity level, everyone's so unique. But it's definitely always a conversation worth having with everyone I work with. What are you having for breakfast, lunch, dinner? What kind of supplements are you taking, if any? Medication, water, how's the water intake? I joke with my colleagues that we went to school and paid all this money to tell people to drink more water and sleep more.
Right.
That's what I get paid for, to tell people to sleep more and stay hydrated.
That's like my training too.
Yeah.
Study computer science, and so I can tell people to, reboot. Power cycle.
That's just like nutrition. You need to hit your, can I swear?
Yeah. No.
Fuck okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hit your restart button. Just hit the reboot button. This life you're living, maybe it's conducive to your health, maybe it's not.
Have you found there's like a general demographic or demographics of people that seek you out?
So awesome question. As a new business owner, as of last year, 12 months ago I started, but I didn't start seeing people until September last year, 2015. And that, the niche, I guess you would call it, right? Your niche market. There are people who seek me out. Generally, they're over the age of 50. The type of training I do is highly effective in increasing bone density. So that's obviously a concern for people as we age, as it should be for everybody. So that has been my, the type of person who I seem to be attracting right now. But I do work with people, all ages. I think youngest maybe is 28 right now to 72.
Is there a lower limit on strength training? Like below a certain age, it's not healthy? Or?
So the type, that's, yeah, a lot of people concerns about that stinting growth, right, and everything. But as long as it's done in a safe environment without sloppy form and ballistic quick movements, mm-hmm. kids should be moving. You know, they should yeah. be using their bodies and growing. Their bones are growing. They're growing. They're a hormonal shitstorm mm-hmm. when they hit 12 or 13, right? So strength training at that age actually can be really effective. They've got their age and hormones on their side. Hmm. You know, they're going to get a lot more out of it almost than us old fogies.
Hundreds of thousands of years ago when you were that age is when you started really hunting and your life meant it.
Yeah, or mending the farm or milking the cows or, you know, hauling lumber, whatever. Now kids are just hunched over on their iPhone, right?
Getting some finger exercise.
Right?
Some exercise.
The fact that question even exists is like, really?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is it healthy for a kid to be staring at a screen at 11 p.m. night on Monday?
No.
No, I mean... What is and what isn't right?
Yeah, I think the three of us seem to... It sounds like we all had a lot of freedom as kids.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely played in the dirt. I mean, a tick got me, but it was worth it. I wouldn't give it back for anything.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for Western medicine, really. I mean, I was on an IV drip of antibiotics for 2 weeks and finally could live a normal childhood, played soccer and sports and everything. But, you know, that did trigger... And I only realized this later on in my 20s, some serious like digestive issues, depression, which already ran in my family. So I was more prone to it, I think, with my genetics.
Hmm. Maybe I have Lyme's disease.
You know, I can't remember the correct term, but it's, it masks itself as other, many people with Alzheimer's actually, or have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's actually have turned out to have Lyme disease.
Oh, so it's kind of a sleeper?
It's a sleeper, yeah. There's a term, and I'm going to kick myself later for not remembering it. But, yeah, it essentially can mimic many more well-known things.
And so when
there.
You would treat them as the other thing, it wouldn't be as effective.
So it's yeah, like...
It's probably misdiagnosed a lot, huh?
Yeah.
It must be of cordyceps, kind of, but...
Right. So... Yeah, that's definitely part of my path that's led me to where I am now doing nutrition and strength training for other people as part of my own journey. And I truly believe that for a lot of people, we're drawn to the things we most need in life.
Yeah.
And so I'm really stoked I've landed where I am now. It's pretty cool to watch people get stronger.
Cool. What's the name of your business?
Live Oak Strength and Nutrition, LLC.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
We'll link to it.
And yeah, so about how long have you been running your business?
So I founded, you know, I applied for the business license and all that in January 2015, so a little over a year, but I didn't start seeing clients until September 2015 because I was still in school till April, but I wanted to get a little head start. So I started working on a website idea and business plan right before I graduated.
Did you get money or have money to
start it?
Seed it? Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, I put tuition on a credit card to get this degree.
Nice.
And then, yeah, still paying that one off. And then
welcome to millennial.
Yeah. My good friend, colleague that I met through Bowman College, Andy Baptist of Optimized Fit, he asked me, hey, the facility where I'm training people with this high intensity training modality, the owner, David DeSisto, is looking for another trainer. And at the time I was already being a personal trainer in the more modern, just kind of well-known sense of the word. And I said, yeah, like this is awesome. That's a great, I'd known what he was doing and it's very unique. So right after nutrition school, did the 6-month certification for the high intensity training. Mm. And it gave me a environment where I could also do my nutrition coaching. So over that course of 2015, finished nutrition school, the business idea kind of formed organically into something. And then the high intensity training was kind of the foundation of what Live Oak Strength and Nutrition is now. It's my space. It's, you know, it's the physical service I offer to people. And then I build on that as much as they want. I'm here, you know, I'm here to support them as much or as little as they want with their nutrition choices.
You initially made some sort of like flyer or way to invite people to check you out. What was that like? What did that, how did that go?
So, yeah, I've made a ton of flyers and, some of them work, some didn't, you know, and what I've learned is the starting this business is I had all these grandiose ideas and I still do, but what really works is mastering one small skill or business service first and then getting crazier after that. Yeah. I was trying to do 7 or 8 crazy things at once and none of them worked. So it's like, all right, I'm going to do strength training once a week for 20 minutes with my clients. All right, cool. Got that down. I've got kind of a little flow, a referral network going. That's building. Cool. Now I'm going to work on some packages that include nutrition. Great. All right. Hmm. So then building from there. So simplicity is key. Hmm. That's what I've learned with the flyers, advertising, finding my niche, making it really bullseye targeted. And, you know, still dreaming big with what this can become. That's why I formed an LLC and not a sole prop.
Yeah.
It's probably, I mean, I probably didn't need to do that, but, people, you know, other business people have done what I want to do, have said, no, it's a good choice. So you'll be happy you did that later.
Yeah, I think so. Cool. Thank you.
Brewski time. Yeah. Where's that gong? They're one of those cool sounds.
You want the gong?
There we go.
Good answer.
Very nice. Okay.
Next question.
Should we move on? Yeah. Next question. What do we got?
Well, I think you answered mine. Why nutrition and area of expertise, background. Anything else on nutrition, Drew?
I could add one thing with nutrition. I mean, there's some good one-liners I could offer to our listeners.
Let's do it, yeah.
If anyone
maybe
out there is like...
are curious about how to eat.
How should I eat? Right?
Sound bites, almost.
Sound bites.
Yeah,
so,
give it to us.
I mean, whatever you think of Michael Pollan or not, you know, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma... I believe he resides nearby in Berkeley.
Is he controversial figure?
He's you know, in the scientific community. You know, there's like the progressive functional medicine folk like Dr. Mark Hyman and Perlmutter of Brain Grain. And then a lot of the scientific community kind of, you know, and them, they clash. And that's cool. I try to really just keep an open mind, and I think they're all doing good work. And I get it. I get the irritation with people offering anecdotal solutions, whether they work or not. But Michael Pollan has, I mean, he's got his after all of his research in nutrition and cooking and what we should eat, he broke it down to eat food, not too much, mostly plants. I like that a lot. I think that sums it up nicely. Another one-liner I'll give you that I really like, this is more from the bodybuilding and high-intensity world, Mike Mentzer, who is one of probably the best bodybuilders of our time and whatever. He went up against Arnold. I think he won once, but not against Arnold. And he had a completely unique approach, different than all the other bodybuilders at the time. Really brilliant mind. And he was telling John Little, one of his friends and colleagues, that his view of food is, hey, eat a little bit of everything and not too much of anything. You can't go wrong. You know, you can cover all your bases. So
somewhere in between those two.
So yeah,
maybe there's a
fine line.
The royal road.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a gradient.
There is a gradient. Yeah, I really, honestly, from what I've learned, it's going to be different. Maybe there is a perfect diet. But even I doubt it, because I mean, depends where you are. Right?
It depends on if you believe
we're on the planet,
too,
right?
Which
and
I
perfect.
Don't.
Right. But what I'm more interested in, and I will pursue further down the road, is the psychology of eating and how to help people make changes, or even if maybe change isn't the right word. I kind of sneer at that word, but like to actually make progress. And I could tell you, the perfect diet to do that would be ideal for you right now, like what
for,
you should do that would get you
for one.
Yeah, for either of you guys. I mean, if we sat down and learned enough about it, I could rock your world. I could, you know, I could make you feel healthier and stronger than you've ever been.
I believe that.
But would you do it?
Maybe.
right? Would you do what I said?
If I wanted to.
If yeah. you, yeah, exactly.
If so, I wanted to, and even if I wanted to, I'd probably do it for a little bit, but I'd need some outside support and encouragement to keep me going.
That's what I'm interested in
right now.
If I was
able to do more of what I wanted to or able to, yeah, if there was some goal that helped me reach.
Right. You'd have to be in alignment with that vision that I had for you. It would have to, so that's the hardest part of my job is finding that middle ground. Yeah, I want you to like take out all the white bread and pasta. But how do you tell that to an Italian, you know, whose grandma makes pasta with them since they were a 3-year-old girl? Yeah. Like, so, you know, baby steps with this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I'm a firm believer in adding things before taking things away, because that eventually the good stuff will push out room for the bad stuff.
I agree with that sentiment. Now, if I may ask a question about this.
Yeah.
You said you have certain wild fantasies about how it could look in the future. Could you just paint a picture for us about the, like, when you're at, like, you know, 98% of what you hope to be at, like, what's like the woohoo, that'd be great picture
with just life in general, my business. I would like to open my own facility, a health center, wellness center, whatever you call it, combining modalities of high intensity strength training, which is to me the best modality I've found, because it's safe, it's time effective, and it's efficient. So you really get the most bang for your metabolic buck with this type of strength training. So
does it build muscle mass?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, depending on genetics and age and everything, what you're eating, stress levels, we take the muscles to failure. One set to failure, you know, like all these, you know, 3 sets of 10 or 8 sets of 12, whatever, right? Your muscles don't know what a rep is, right?
No.
Your body only knows energy input and output demands, what you're asking it to do, and can it do it. So whether you do that in 20 reps, 60, or 1, it doesn't know the difference. So what we do is we do 1 set to failure at a pretty moderate, intense weight, and we do so slowly, creepy crawly slow. So there's absolutely no momentum. So it's all this force is on resistance. The muscle.
Sounds hard. As I hear you do, as I hear you describe it, I've lifted weights a lot. Hard. That sounds hard.
Try doing a bicep curl with 30 pounds, 10 seconds up and 10 seconds down. You start shaking after the fourth or fifth one.
And you haven't done 1 rep.
Yeah. So.
So is the whole reps thing, is that just garbage?
I mean, there's some truth. I think there's
What's the benefit to reps?
It's just you have to. It would work if people spent a little more time preparing and choosing the correct weight. But then there's also,
how do we know what the correct weight is?
Right. So, I mean, you have to, so if you're, whatever your goal is, they say, you know, 1 to 3 reps is great for strength, and 6 to 10 reps is best for hypertrophy, muscle growth. And doing it. So like if say your goal is to do 8 reps and you couldn't do a 9th. So, I mean, that would take some time, right, to select the proper weight. So what we do is totally a machine workout that also takes into consideration the strength curve of our joints. So
see, that's interesting.
Strength curve of our joints.
This would be good if it was a video podcast. This will sound silly. But say you go up to your dumbbells at the gym, right, and you pick some weights that you want to do some bicep curls in. You could not, with good form and no momentum, start a bicep curl with straight arms in good form, because you're weakest here with your arms straight. But once you have like a 10 degree angle in your elbow, you could move that same amount of weight because you're stronger in this position than you are here. If that makes sense. So the machines I put people through on the workout take that into consideration, so we get the most appropriate weight, but you can still start and finish it in every range of motion. So that's the strength curve, and that's different for every positioning. Like in a leg press, you start off weakest and you become strongest as the legs straighten. But a bicep curl is I think it's weak, strong, weaker. So it's weakest, strong, weaker, something like that.
I mean, a human body's all simple machines.
Yeah,
just levers, pulleys.
Yeah, that's all it is. So I mean, if I, so I take my clients one set to failure on about five or six exercises. We, you know, you can't recruit 100% of the muscle fibers, but we get pretty close. And get the same results as people going like an hour like at a time, 3-4 times a week. You do 20 minutes once a week.
20 minutes once a week is the same.
So that
is, yeah, 3 or 4 hours, 3 days a week.
I mean, it's totally, you know, it's a crap shoot, but roughly I can get, I mean,
for
and
mass too,
it shares,
for muscle mass?
It's for muscle mass. Yeah. Wow. So when I first started this, and granted there's the law of conservation of energy, right? You do adapt, but with Andy, my colleague I mentioned earlier, I started training with him after four 20-minute sessions, so over the course of a month.
Dude, 420.
Granted, I am a nutritionist, so I was eating well. I gained about 6 pounds of lean muscle mass.
That's pretty cool.
Huh. Right. It's like that Tim Ferriss geek to freak experiment. Obviously, my genetics, I'm a very ectomorphic thin dude, so I can't, like, I'll never look like Arnold. And
yeah. Well, Drew, I think you gained muscle pretty quick, right?
Some people very easy for me to gain muscle or fat. It just...
Yeah.
Both...
You get
keep
the more
going.
Mesomorph body frame.
For me, it's intelligence and wisdom. It's just,
there you go.
Just naturally.
Aubrey just
falls
naturally
in. Exudes.
Absorbs.
My pores.
Socrates.
Nice. So, your mesomorph?
I'm very ectomorphic.
So, what am I?
I would say you're more mesomorph, endomorph. Yeah. Cool. These are just
roughly
rough three categorizations of body frame shapes based on the shape of the skeleton. That the skeleton gives us our main.
And you'd say I'm
shape.
Endo.
You're endo,
short, kind of squat,
but wide shoulders.
Muscle mass.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'll take it.
He's handsome.
Looking good, man. But
feeling good.
I don't know. Where were we? So we're talking about gaining muscles.
Just talking about the
My goals. So anyway.
So
tangent.
Yeah, coolest company. 98%.
I want to have a cool company. I want to have two or three locations. Something in Bay Area.
Oh.
Something near maybe Tahoe or Nevada City. Although I'm not sure if it would work there. And something probably in Southern California.
Huh.
You know,
California seems like the perfect place to.
That's the spot to do.
And
your
it's
deal.
I mean, it makes sense. People are busy these days. So if you can get in 20 minutes once a week, you'll be all right.
Yeah, that's much you'll more attractive right. than going, you know,
it's
3 days a week for an hour to the gym and then memberships and all this other stuff.
The most important thing is not the modality or, like, you know, there's nothing magic about what I do, but adherence and consistency really is the biggest factor in making positive change.
Yeah.
David DeSisto, my mentor, where I train, he's been doing this 20 something years. He still has clients that he's been working with from day one. They've been consistent for 20 freaking years. How many people do you know go to the gym 4 or 5 times a week for 20 years? People drop off
many.
After February and going you know.
Yeah.
So it's realistic, and they're more likely to stick with it, make it part of their life. Which I really liked. I'm really realistic about that, you know.
Yeah.
About setting goals. It's like, well, yeah, maybe 5 times a week would be better, but are you going to do it?
So could one
think not.
Do some of these slow exercises? I mean, do you need special equipment, or can you just use free weights, dumbbells?
Yeah, you could. I mean, the machines we use have cams and cam effects that make the muscles get more inroading, more breakdown. The myofibrils get broken down more and cause more growth. But
so they kind of compensate for resistance?
Yeah, so like that strength curve we were talking about. You get just more in a more time-effective and efficient manner. But you can totally, there's a lot of guys are doing this with free weights, and you can do it. Absolutely. 10 seconds up, 10 seconds down, one set to failure. You can even do this as a body weight exercise. Try doing a 1 minute pull up. It's
I couldn't. Not right.
I'm still working on trying to do one pull up.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So I mean,
I think I could probably do like two,
1 minute pull up.
1 minute up, 1 minute down. Or even 30-30. Or even 10-10. Just take momentum out of the equation.
You know what? Try
or a push up. 10 seconds down, 10 seconds up.
Try a 1 minute
squat.
One rep of jumping rope over 1 minute.
A 1 minute jump rope.
Then you'll probably get the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
because you'll be defying gravity.
This is you'll like be flying, yeah. Which is cool.
You have to go to Fairfield, Iowa for that. Study with Maharishi. Yeah. So my dream facility would include the concepts and some special machinery for the high intensity training. I would have a space for probably massage therapy, nutrition coaching, and I highly believe that managing your stress has a lot to do with this equation of health. So there would be a space for some yoga and something there too.
Hmm. Would you have you considered like, you know, Live Oak, like food line or something, or
that was
a product that you could maybe sell at maybe a craft beer bar or something?
Yeah, that was one of my grandiose ideas in the beginning that just I realized wasn't a priority for me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely there. I make broth and like coconut oil, raw cacao chocolates and things that I would love to somehow wrap into the equation.
Well, that reminds you mentioned one time about you have an ebook.
Yeah, I'm working on an ebook right now.
Yeah. That sounds like does that help you meet that need of culinary?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to do it all. You know, I try to walk the walk. So my ebook ideas I'm working on is 10, just keep it simple, 10 meals, 10 healthy meals, under 10 minutes and under $10. Mm. I figure if I can do that in the Bay Area where food is just ridiculous, then that could be, I could under promise good. And over deliver in other
people don't have money scenarios. They don't have time and they want to get healthy.
That our lead guitarist Mr. Orville, you know, he's always he's looking at my salads and sardines and things that I'm eating and he's like, damn dude.
Love you, Orville.
Do that. Love you, Or. Yeah, so that's what I'm that's a current little project working on.
It helps to walk the walk because I mean, you exist in integrity, and people see that you exist in integrity.
Got it. Yeah.
That's mandatory, I think. Express ideas, you have to be living them.
Yeah, I totally agree. So.
Cool. Anything else on nutrition?
Oh, you man.
Take
time out.
Yeah, so what does it mean to do something to failure?
So
you say like do it until failure?
Yeah, we call it muscle failure or fatigue, momentary muscle fatigue. So there's an order of recruitment with muscle fibers. You know, there's the slow twitch and there's intermediate and fast, and it's impossible to tap into and fatigue the fast twitch until the slow twitch are fatigued. So we move slowly and the slow twitch are predominantly working. They're fueled by oxygen, high mitochondrial activity. You get to start that burning sensation while, let's say, you're doing a leg press, you're pushing a bunch of weight, and it starts to shake, you're starting to burn, and you want to give up. That's the point where the fast twitch are starting to kind of take over, and that means that the oxygen you're breathing in is not enough to fuel the muscles, essentially do what you're asking your body to do. So it starts breaking down other sources of energy within the body. And fast twitch fibers fatigue fast. That's why they're called fast. That's like what sprinters use, right?
Right.
So they don't
shuttle run and
stuff. Yeah, like bam. It's like all out energy. Like, and that you can't do that for very long, right? You collapse.
Yeah.
So once that starts going, I mean, you're toast soon. So I'll put someone through the leg press. They're going up, they're going down, up and down, maybe third or fourth rep. They start pushing and the weights stop moving. And they're like breathing. They're almost hyperventilating. Breathing is one of my major cues to just so they don't get an aneurysm or whatever, you know, a headache.
Yeah.
So to do something to failure really means with good form for me, until the weights don't move, and your body just physically has nothing left in the tank to push it. Now, we were talking on the break about you know, how subjective that really is, and, you know, why to do this with me as a supervisor. You know, you always will get a little more time out of it, a little bit more muscle inroading, as we call it, breaking down. And essentially what that is sending a message to your body that, hey, you're in a situation that's dangerous. You're freaking out. So if we're lucky enough to survive this situation, we better adapt and get stronger, so in case it happens again in the future, we can survive. Right. So that sends that's the message. That's the mechanism that strength training is. It's sending a body the mess, you know, putting on muscle is very expensive for the body. It burns a lot of calories. It requires a lot of energy. So to do it, you have to give the body a good damn reason to do it. Hmm. And for me, being an ectomorph and small bones, small bad genetics for it, it takes a lot of food, a lot of recovery time to actually have my muscles grow. Whereas people who are more fast twitch dominant, like Drew here, puts on muscle quickly, doesn't have to give as much care to it, as which I'm trying probably to say, you know.
Is there any kind of correlation between body type, ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph, and diet restrictions? Like, I don't know, I think about someone that can easily build muscle mass, do they want more protein or more meat, or...
Yeah, I mean, again, coming back to age and goals, of course, if you just want, you know, you're an active middle-aged person, you know, and you want to be healthy, yeah, your body type will dictate a lot of that. I mean, if you are overweight or diabetic, you are inherently very sensitive to carbs, carbohydrates. I mean, that is a sure sign that your cells are a little more resistant to the insulin and letting them bring the glucose into the cells. Whereas for me, I can, you know, especially after these workouts, which are glycogen depleting workouts, they literally drain the sugar out of your muscle cells. I can get away with eating a ton of, I could probably drink a soda and it wouldn't even affect my blood sugar levels after this workout. It would just go right into the muscles.
What's but that's your favorite not gonna soda?
Be, oh,
Dr. Root, Pepper?
Root beer.
Nice.
Root beer.
Root beer.
Nice. Good call.
Yeah, root beer for
I'm
sure.
I'm a root beer fan too.
But I tend to, you know, just, I mean, I pay attention to my macros, as they call it, like protein, fat, and carbs. But, at age 30, even being small boned, I noticed, like, I can't get away with eating what I used to. I get softer around the midsection, easy, you know, and that just happens with age. So, for me, the most important thing is, though, just getting enough food in throughout the day. Once, you know, if you can do that consistently, then play around with nutrient timing, as they call it. You know, it's like, yeah, maybe you, you know, place your carbs more after your workout, and not combining carbs with fat, because carbs plus fat equals insulin equals fat storage, right? So, you know, you can play with these concepts to see how they actually affect. And we could talk about all these little things, but, you know, the reality is, how do they actually affect your life? Maybe the science says it's one thing is happening, but you might not notice a big difference. And you can get away with it.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, if you had to name one thing that people eat a lot of and shouldn't, like, what's the most poisonous thing that we eat?
I think soda. There's no fiber in it and it's all sugar, so
it's just water, a little bit of water content, but that's it.
Yeah, and I mean, berries and fruit are all sugar too, fructose, but at least they have a little fiber to slow down that sugar spike. You know, the difference between, like, a healthy blood sugar level of between 80 and 100 and being pre-diabetic or diabetic is literally about a quarter of a teaspoon of sugar in your body, which is about 5 liters of blood.
Yeah.
So putting, so say like a medium fry at McDonald's, I believe I was reading the other day, it's somewhere like it's 45 grams of carbohydrates in a medium fry at McDonald's. That's about 10 times the amount of sugar that you have in your blood at resting. So, like, think about how insane that is on your pancreas. Like, we're just beating the shit out of our pancreas, and those beta cells that release the insulin are so fragile. So I think sugar, when it's not attached to fiber or not mixed, you know, in a well-balanced meal, is probably
number one
thing sugar, that could make a huge difference in your life.
Soda. That's a cool answer.
Soda,
I like that.
Soda pop.
I mean, bread, potatoes, pasta. Bread has a higher glycemic index than sugar. So, I mean, like white Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
That'll bring your blood sugar up a lot. So, you know, just things to be mindful of, I guess, if you care about how you're feeling. If you notice you're not feeling good, maybe, hey, check out what you're eating. See how it affects your mood, your energy, your sleep.
I estimate that people, especially in the strength training portion of your work, get emotional, break down. Is that true?
Yeah, people have a whole wide spectrum of responses to going to failure. You know, a lot of one guy I was training, he's really hard on himself. He's a go-getter, really a family man, father of two, like hedge fund manager, and insanely strong. Like, by any, compared to me, compared to a lot of people I train. I mean, he was leg pressing more than I've had anyone do. And he got to his last rep, and it would fail, and he would be pissed. He's like, fuck, could have gotten another one. I'm like, dude, you know what you just accomplished? It's amazing. Like, you don't even weigh 200 pounds, and you just pushed, like, 410 pounds.
Wow.
Slowly, with perfect form. Like, do you know what you just asked your body to do? It's amazing. So he would beat himself up quite a bit. Hmm. Other people just make really funny, like, almost sexual noises sometimes. Oh, my God. Oh, it burns. So, you know, wide range of responses to being pushed that hard.
Huh.
For sure.
I bet.
But tricks of the trade, yeah. My number one cue when I'm in the room training someone is, my number one cue to them is to breathe.
Hmm.
People, you know, if you think about, like, when you go to pick up a couch, like, what do? Right, you hold your breath. They're like those big deadlifters, like those power lifters. Right, as you lift. For some reason, we attach, like, what our lungs are doing to, like, exertion, and it can be fucking dangerous. You can really, if you exert a lot of energy while you hold your breath, it's called the Valsalva sink, and you literally block blood that's oxygen, that's deoxygenated, it's trying to go back to the heart to get oxygenated. You can block it, so it bounces back, goes into the head, in your brain, and the brain's expecting nutrient rich oxygen full blood, and it gets this empty package, and it's like,
wow,
what the fuck. And I've had an exercise induced headache, and it's not fun. And it was from holding my breath while chest pressing a lot of weight. My trainer didn't catch it, I didn't catch it, and it was like a wave of, almost like you're about to pass out, like blackout. But it was a wave of pain up the back of your neck into your head. I don't recommend it. So I'm very cautious telling people, you know, I probably overdo it. Whoops. Telling people to breathe, but I just don't want them to have to experience what I did.
Cool. Well, I mean, a little bit of safety push is okay.
Yeah. Right. Tread on the side of safety. You never hurt anyone.
Is it time for a word from our sponsor?
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience. Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Thanks, Final Corp, for sponsoring this episode. We got your package of poison sumac flavored mayonnaise.
Yeah, it was over 50 gallons, which was a lot.
Yeah. I think we'll be able to get through it all, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, I've been making soups. I've been washing my hair. I've been feeding the dogs. I mean, it's been a messy house, I'll tell you that.
Cool. Well, yeah, thanks again, Final Corp. Send us that Mr. Product and ad copy. I mean, come on, guys. Get on the ball here.
Yeah. That mister sure is great. I sure can't wait to get ours to try it on.
Okay.
Okay. So, so I have an idea for a topic. I'm wondering if now would work, or if we want to maybe do a final thought on fitness and nutrition and then do topic, or what do we think?
Let's kill the nutrition. We can, I can beat that to death.
Okay. Yeah.
So we can move on from nutrition?
That was great. I really appreciate it.
That was fun, guys.
I think that's going to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. So this topic is a different kind of way than we normally have topics. And what I want to do is try to have a conversation where we can try to explore something together. And that is arguments. Arguments we see, arguments we have, what they do, what they don't do, and interactions there within.
Okay. Well, I think argument is essential. I think it was John Dewey who said debate is essential in an informed populace to maintain democracy. So I believe that, and I also believe that argument is important because it fosters reasoning and critical thinking and allows you to see a subject from multiple perspectives.
Yeah,
that's a kind of first salvo thought there.
Okay, thank you. Do you have a first?
Whew. That's my brain's spinning on that one. Yeah, if we could only be so eloquent as Aubrey over here.
Yeah.
When something that comes up that you don't agree with, and you get upset about that, I think that's the definition of being closed-minded, right? Hmm. Possibly. Because you're taking it personally about you and your belief system. Mm-hmm. And whether you like it or not, there's 7 billion other people on this planet that are going to have an opinion that are probably different than you.
Yeah.
So why not open up and learn from that? Right?
Right.
I think I just today read a quote from Thomas Edison about how silly it would be to end friendships or, you know, just because somebody else is voting for somebody else than you are, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously that branches into a whole core belief system, whether you vote libertarian, Democrat, or Republican. Mm. But, you have all these silly people on Facebook unfriending each other because someone's supporting Trump and someone's voting for Bernie.
Yeah, that's a little scary to me because it's the rise of personalization, especially with Facebook, it creates an echo chamber in which your opinions, your voice, your thoughts, your beliefs are just echoed back to you.
Yeah.
Because Facebook will say, okay, he's not a Trump supporter, so we're not going to show him any Trump stuff in his feed.
Right.
Or whatever. I don't even know the jargon of Facebook, but so you could potentially, everything is just kind of reaffirming your own beliefs that you see. But the downside to that is that you're not being exposed to other viewpoints, other arguments that you may disagree with, but knowing that that disagreement is there is important.
Yeah.
Like when you think about the old town hall meetings, I just read this book called The Filter Bubble, actually. If you think about the old town hall meetings, you would go there and, the whole community would be there. Let's say it's a small town. And you would see people that you disagree with. Oh, there's that guy who, has those beliefs. I don't agree with him, but I see him and I see that he's arguing and he's got a vested interest and it's important to him. So I'm acknowledging that he's there.
Yeah.
With personalization and the filter bubble, etc., you don't get that. You don't even see that guy. You walk into the town meeting and everyone's there like, oh, just agreeing with you. Everything you say. Yep. Okay, great. and that's it. You don't, you're not exposed to any of the outliers that you might disagree with, and that's I think that's really dangerous.
Yeah, that's not an environment to foster growth.
Well, that reminds me of every single YouTube video in the comments underneath it. That's like, if you just look, almost 100% of videos on YouTube, you scroll down to like the 8th comment and it's like some insane thing that has nothing to do with the video.
Right.
That is just about the commenters hating on each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you go scroll down a certain amount and then you'll see Hitler's name.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or your and you are with a star on it.
Oh, God.
Some ad hominem attack.
So I'm, you know, Facebook worries me because there's a lot of, I have a lot of, and that's a whole thing. I despise Facebook. But, yeah, they're closed-minded. They really seem to have a closed-minded approach, like a gated community in which everyone shares your beliefs on your block. And you can't access the other block where there are disagreements with what your viewpoint is. So I wish that, I wish Facebook and personalization would foster the dissenting opinion, because that's what's important for change. And
But they want you to get addicted, and then that's not going to happen if you've proven you're a Trump supporter and they're shoving Bernie in your face, right? Mm-hmm. Or vice versa, yeah. Whatever. Then you're going to spend less time on their platform, less time looking at the ads. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have any first thoughts? Sorry, I kind of went on there for a little bit. That's
good. I do. When I think about arguments, the thing that comes to mind is when I think of two loved ones who are both clearly hurting, and they take turns shouting something that they wish the other person would acknowledge and listen to. And what usually happens is the other person hears what they say without acknowledging it, and then make a statement to try to convince the first person of something else, that something else happened, or there's a different truth, or something. But when I think about arguments, the thing that I find interesting is that it seems like you can always spot right when they start.
Arguments?
It's like the very first sound. You can go, you could do it in, watching people talk, and then it turns into an argument. You could put the dot on the time code when the argument began. And it's usually where one person hears something and either dislikes, disagrees, or wants to try to change it.
Yeah.
And the other person who said it doesn't feel like they've been listened to, so they need to say it a new way or say another thing about it. And I believe that that will be a thing of the past eventually. I believe that we as a people will no longer use that strategy to delegate, deliver, and to pontificate ideas, to explore debate, to sort of go around. I believe that it will be, that's possible in our lifetime. And that's the thing that I think is really interesting about arguments. Because if we had cultures and societies who, when they had to say something hard, we were all, say, raised, or we were all in an environment where it met our needs to profoundly make sure that when you're in a conversation that the other person is being heard. Like, that's what we were all making sure we, like, knew. The other person was being heard. And essentially, if that is a version of an ethos, that could make a lot of shift in that direction.
It's almost like everyone should have a podcast with their friends, because it encourages, it discourages interrupting and encourages learning. And it also encourages trying to speak in full sentences.
Yeah.
You know, the argument has kind of changed meaning. Its original meaning was not a shouting match. It was really debate is what it means. You can have an argument with someone, be level-headed and quiet and respectful, and have a reasoned argument. But kind of the way we use the word argument today is it seems to have more of a connotation of violence attached to it.
I think they throw in this the word respect in that same soup. They say, you didn't respect me, I don't respect you.
This is why critical thinking is so important, because critical thinking fosters the ability to hold two different viewpoints in your mind simultaneously and be able to argue either one without, well, you know, everyone has bias, but try without bias to argue either point. And that's like, that's huge. Critical thinking is like a huge kind of solution. For the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Death to the ego.
Yeah. Well, we still, it's like, how about shush to the ego? Because if the ego dies, then don't we die too? I don't know.
Are we the ego?
Are we? I don't know. Maybe it's a gradient.
Yeah.
Yeah, chances are if it's in the realm of human experience, it's a gradient. It's on a continuum, and it's probably a paradox if you drill down into it enough.
Gradient is the name of the business I'm starting.
I like that a lot.
Whoops. Sorry.
Wrong one.
What's the name of it? What's the name of it?
Gradient.
Nailed it.
Boom. Somewhere along the scale.
Yeah, I like my little soundboard, guys. But yeah, argument's a good thing. You know, a lot of people get triggered in arguments.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wonder if you guys could think of a time in which you had an argument that you would want something else out of than what happened. I could guess think of that too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, arguments with your family.
Yeah.
Those are hard because there is such personal, like, stuff there. You know, it's hard to get away from taking it personally when it's the people that you live with and who take care of you and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, some arguments with my parents, they could have gone better, you know? Mm-hmm. You want, like, examples specifically?
I mean, if you want to, I could think of one, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was an angry kid who was shy and didn't really articulate myself, as well as I could have to my parents, so that would be an outcome that you know, it's not regret, but that would be a good outcome, just to fully articulate what exactly my need and my grievance was, you know.
Yeah.
that's like a huge step. It seemed like that never happened with my parents, but you know, it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard to be like totally dispassionate, rational when you're dealing with your family members, you know?
Yeah. I remember it was a while ago that I had like an argument sort of with my mom over the phone. She was asking questions about like money stuff, and I didn't really want to talk about money stuff, but she just kept asking me money questions, and I said something like, say something that is not about money. And, you know, I think it hurt her feelings, and her feelings were hurt, and I was like, well, what was my goal there? Why wouldn't I just say, you know, Mom, I'm noticing that our topics are pretty much just about money, and I'm wondering if I could request to talk about something else.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we just get in that state, and that happens. And I also think it's like a muscle. I do think you can train your reactions. Not reactions. Everyone's going to react, but what you do with what you've received. Like noticing, I notice I'm having an experience, I'm being triggered, something like that. And then like the muscle strengthening is noticing that that's happening, realizing that it's not totally the other person's fault, and that, oh, there's a conversation happening all before saying anything.
Yeah.
That's the trick.
The personal trainer in me is thinking, what's the proper dosage of having an argument? Maybe 2 times a week.
Yeah.
So you can recover from it.
Yeah.
Stronger.
Yeah, I like that.
There you go.
I'm on board with that.
Wow, we just solved it there. Empathy and imagination, guys.
So I think Friday night.
Let's have an argument.
See how we recover.
And I mean, if it
more level headed.
Yeah, if it was a level headed argument, I mean, those are great.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, present an argument, right?
I mean,
not like present a shouting match and just try to shut me down, but present an argument. What's your evidence?
I like a question. How emotionally invested are you in the other person's response to what you're saying? I like that question.
Zero. Mm.
Usually when people are not level-headed, maybe as you say, they are really emotionally invested in what the other person's going to respond to what they're saying.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, I have all these emotions, and if you don't say the right thing. I want it to be.
Or they're just waiting. They're just waiting to get provoked.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
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 And that's like a trap. That's like, it's almost like a subversion of being addicted, kind of, to that reaction that triggered panic, hurry, nervous state. It just, dopamine happens after the adrenaline anyway, so it's fine.
Well, you're basically carving out channels in your brain, pathways, connections that get stronger over time if you're doing the same thing.
Exactly.
So it very much is like a muscle. The brain feels no pain, though. That's why you can have open brain surgery and be awake.
Whoa.
And they're like, okay, that's, I'm going to touch here, and your arm's going to move.
Yeah. Right.
What's weird about the brain is that it feels no pain and it doesn't age. So if we reached a point where technology, where you could have brain transplants or brain in a jar, you could essentially live forever. And that would be one way to solve space travel. Because you could have an astronaut who's just a brain in a jar, right? Send them out 250 years. They're living some kind of fabricated reality. It's totally pleasant, hopefully.
But wouldn't they need a nervous system and eyes to take all that information?
No, just when they get where
just hardwired to robotic
matrix style.
And when they get where they're going, put the brain into a machine and have them do their thing.
Report back in 1,000 years.
We're all dead.
Yeah.
What happened? Who knows? Yeah. Somebody knows.
It'll probably just be like the equivalent to a USB drive. been in space for 1,000 years. Plug it in and see what he saw.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a good, that's a good topic, man. I wish we could argue about it more. Wish we weren't so in agreement.
Yeah. But we did. We had a good argument there, right? That was nice.
That's good. Got me thinking. I mean, in terms of the exercise part, for me, I don't have any specific examples of old arguments. I can't remember too many. But I do remember the way I feel after every argument. It's pretty consistent.
What's that feeling?
It's drained and almost embarrassed. You know, when you walk away from it, then you have 5, 10 minutes, maybe an hour to chill and reflect. It's like, oh, really? Did I say that? And then you go out. It's like that first encounter with that person again after the argument. It's like head down.
Tail between your legs. Yeah, it's probably their tail between their legs. Too. Yeah.
It's like, really? So what is that about? How do we... I mean, do we need to shorten that amount of time where you can have the tail untucked, or does it even matter?
Maybe it's just inevitable. I think one could, before the wound-on-wound volley began, I think eventually people can, when like they serve it up and the other person volleys it back, you go, wait, put down the racket.
Yeah.
Wait, pause the story. Put down the racket. We're volleying again before it even has a complete cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, acting would serve you well in the first phases of trying to get there, like just act like you have no personal feelings towards this topic or something, you know. They're shouting at you and just, oh yeah, interesting.
I think that's what gets me into arguments in the first place, is I'm spaced it out. Being spaced out.
Oh, okay.
Do people have feelings about that?
What? I wasn't listening.
I think for me, it's being sarcastic or something, or being interpreted as being received as sarcastic or whatever.
Right.
But you think it's because you space out and people are like, "Hey." I space out
sometimes. Yeah, I'm like, you know, only listening part of what they're saying.
Do you know why you space out? Are you?
I don't know, it's working on your mechanism, possibly. I don't want to deal with this right now. Or I'm bored. Yeah, maybe.
Is there something you always return to, kind of? that you're thinking of, or is it just kind of Space Cadet?
Not Facebook.
I'm just kidding. Facebook.
Number of followers on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm like, oh.
Number of likes on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, I have a question.
The only
question,
important metrics.
If that's all right. We danced around it a little bit, but I'm curious about the political climate and your opinion about it.
Man. I go back and forth.
It's a fucking political show now. Fuck.
You know, I mean, I'll be 33 next month. So, honestly, I haven't, you know, I've voted 3 times for 3 presidents. I don't know. Anyway.
You guys, the two of you guys are like non-voters.
No, I'm a voter.
I'm not a voter.
He's not a voter, but he's an unemployment gatherer, which that's an argument point right there.
There you go.
That's a huge conflict of interest. But anyway.
For me, all I was going to say is this is the first time I can remember where I still honestly don't know who I'm going to vote for. Whereas in the past, I knew as soon as all the candidates were selected. Like, I knew who I was going to vote for right from... It didn't matter. I didn't have to listen to a single debate.
Even before the...
Primaries and everything. Yeah. But now I'm like, I'm still kind of torn. Honestly.
Would you mind sharing your story?
Well, I mean, becoming a business owner this last year has definitely made me a little more conservative in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I could never put my own economic wealth and situation before social justice, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
So, whew, that dog.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, hey, thanks, Loki.
Got a little
little present.
Little package.
So with that being said, I'd have a real hard time, I think, voting Republican.
Hmm.
Ever. But, you know, it's so hard to say.
Yeah. Well, I think if we do have public health care, then it's almost like cigarette smoking should be illegal.
Yeah.
Because let's say you have a bad habit. I have none.
Mm-hmm.
You have a bad habit. We're all paying in the same pool. That means I'm paying for your extra insurance, premiums, whatever, because of your bad habit.
Yeah.
That's a sticking point for me.
How we deal with that.
That's like...
And you know, I'm the guilty party in that one, but
I think that's in part of a conversation. I mean, I am in the opinion that we should totally end this socioeconomic system completely and start something new.
Yeah.
I don't think any part of it's salvageable.
And, it's pretty broken.
Yeah. I think everyone knows that. I think the people running for president know that. And I think more and more people aren't voting because it's bullshit and it just smells like bullshit.
The
whole panoply of candidates is just
the fact
garbage.
That we have electoral college, the fact that there are super delegates, what the fuck is that?
Yeah
But is the solution just to give up?
No, it's to create parallel governance that's amazingly more efficient and then demonstrate.
But until that time, we just don't vote. We just give up until that somehow magically comes into being?
Almost. What you do is move out of the way. The system will take itself down and crash or slowly crumble. And what we do is we measure and meet our needs without the context of government.
I feel like we should take a call or something.
Yeah.
From a listener.
Let's do it. Okay, and coming in from... we could.
Yeah, politics is one of those incendiary issues.
Talk a lot about it.
You know, I think it's good to touch base with that world, though. Even though I don't believe in it and expect it to fully fail, I think it's still interesting to touch base with it. You know. But... me voting for any candidate would be me voting for the system that's more crazy than can even be imagined.
Yeah. The system that's propping up here.
But isn't you
your
not
lifestyle and your rent
not, right?
Yeah,
not voting
hmm?
also of you know helping the system win by you not voting. You're kind of giving up your right to be a part of
this fucked up society. I would gladly give up my right to be a part of this system.
Yeah.
And as it harvests from my labor for everywhere and every angle, I have in return harvested briefly for my previous labor to get me to the point of where I'm going. But I'm way ahead on paying them.
Yeah.
Quite. And we'll never catch up. So in that way, I feel that temporary unemployment is still functioning in my for my own ethics.
Yeah.
Like, I've given so much. Yeah. And then my job vaporized, right? So that's like the strategy.
It's a way of believing it. But you've gotten so much too that you that you're that doesn't have that you didn't buy, but it was just there. Like, let's say highways.
Roads.
Yeah. Let's say schooling. Let's say libraries. Yeah. How fucking great are libraries?
They're really great.
Cops? You ever have a cop save your ass?
No.
Okay. Well.
But firefighters neither do.
Right.
Marina, harbor master.
Diamond of bureaucracy, just.
But again, these are this is infrastructure that's there that you take for granted, you know. It's not like you're just giving, 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 and then, oh, well, I'm getting a little back from unemployment. I mean, it's been, reciprocity has been happening the whole time.
Yeah. I agree. I think that there's so much of that, more than I could even know. Like, the fact that my mom could ride in a car on a road to a hospital to give birth to me is pretty profoundly, amazingly better than a lot of other opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
If you add those together, that's an incredible amount of wealth and fortune. And I agree that the socioeconomic system in its previous state was helpful. I do think that it was a necessary step. Our global free market capitalist fractional reserve democracy functioned and was a great improvement over other things that were going on.
Was there a tipping point for you, or do you?
I think the first Great Depression was when it ended its usefulness. I think that was the death.
In 45 or whatever it was?
29. I think, I think that's when it dropped off.
Yeah.
I mean, because all the shit was still there. All the resources were unchanged. And everyone starved and didn't work just because of some other person took everyone's money. That's really what happened.
Yeah.
So that's allowed to happen. And it happens way worse than that now. Bailing the banks out 2008 is like, what are you talking about?
The whole too big to fail thing is garbage.
So the only reason we're still existing is because we bailed them out. If we wouldn't have bailed them out, this would have been over.
Lifeline right now.
Yeah.
Right? We're on an IV drip.
And the collapses will get closer together over time. Yeah. They just will. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 2001 was the .com, right? 2008 was the housing market.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. There's going to be a tech bubble popping some point in the Bay Area.
There must be.
I think so. So many startups.
Yeah.
And so many of them, in my opinion, are ideas that are just
pointless.
Dumb.
Redundant.
Redundant.
Pointless. Department. Redundant.
Redundancy.
Not
department
well, not, redundancy. Not thought out.
How many food delivery companies do we need to be starting every year in the Bay Area? Like 3 or 4? Is that enough?
Zero.
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 We need to be starting one garden pyramid.
The Cloutier obelisk?
Per the miniature version. Per backyard.
Yeah.
So like
they start.
Something that's like a like a, you know, I don't know, like the footprint of a human. So let's say 6 feet by 4 by 4 or something. Where you could grow a bunch of food and collect water. And
sounds like way cooler than voting.
take businesses out of the equation right. by empowering people to produce their own stuff.
That's yeah. what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I hear that.
Do that.
Produce our own stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of it's materialism, though. I mean, that's why we're in the rat race, right? So we can buy
but what
shiny.
If you don't feel like it.
A shiny new.
Hmm? You don't feel like it.
Yeah.
I guess if you're hungry enough, you'll start to feel like it.
I guess so.
But then how do we pay doctors and lawyers? And I guess we wouldn't need lawyers.
Probably not.
We'd need doctors,
Well,
though.
I agree with Shakespeare. Mm. Kill all the lawyers.
Kill all. I have some friends who are lawyers, so they can maybe get different jobs before the hammer comes down.
Just call themselves attorneys, and they're set.
No, they'll argue their way out of it.
What do you call 100 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean?
Oh.
A good start.
Oh.
No. No. All right. Do we have a question that we want to ask our audience this week?
Hmm.
Anybody have any ideas?
That's a good.
Something that we could ask our audience?
Give me
maybe
a think
about
for a second.
Nutrition or?
How about what is your definition of health?
Hmm.
Perfect.
That's great.
Nailed it.
And that can be personal health or health of a society, I guess.
Yeah.
We had in a previous episode, we talked about a resource-based economy, which is what I advocate. I don't know if you're familiar with that term.
Yeah, Jacques.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jacques Fresco.
Fresco, yeah.
Peter Joseph.
Yeah, I know those trippy dudes.
The Zeitgeist Movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was hoping we would say it at the same time. That would be the higher one.
The Zeitgeist Movement. Thank you. Wow, that was really good. We're actually starting a new East Bay chapter.
We just had a meeting last week.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for inviting me to that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Synergetic, emergent, resource-based economy.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah.
We can measure and meet the needs of the people in the planet.
All of them.
All the animals and things.
And it's hard to get away from hierarchies and sort of centralized governing bodies because of that need to measure.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what I see as one of the main pitfalls is how to organize it.
How to organize what?
How to organize the synergetic, emergent, resource-based economy city.
Hmm.
Who measures all the resources?
Everyone.
Where are they stored?
Everywhere.
Who has access to it? Everywhere. Who reviews them? You know?
That's an open source
Who
system.
Makes the so decisions?
All those answers is everyone. All those answers is open sourced.
Okay. Well, I mean, Linux is open source, right? You guys know about Linux?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a final arbiter of the Linux kernel, right?
Hmm.
So he's the final gatekeeper on the whole project, even though it's open source. And a lot of open source projects are like that. As long as someone is there to kind of foster it, it'll work. But once they're not there, it just falls apart.
So we need managers. We need hierarchy.
Or we need some viable alternative to the traditional hierarchical structures that we've dealt with and seen.
Hmm.
And I don't have an answer. I just have questions.
I think we can definitely run a peaceful society without hierarchy. And I've definitely experienced it. So that's what makes me believe that it's possible.
Yeah.
In the desert of Nevada?
That's one of the places I've experienced non-hierarchy.
But my question is, why if that's such a great system, why can't you just have Burning Man year-round?
Well, Burning Man can't happen year-round because we drag out so many resources to a desert, and then they run out.
Okay. See, I don't see that as the limiting factor. I see the limiting factor is the anarchy. It can only be a week long because it can't be any longer.
Because it'll disintegrate. You'll know when you go.
Yeah, that's one of my big questions about Burning Man. Is like, oh, this is a great, you know, it's so great. Okay, what has been going on for 30 years? if the model is so great and so proven, why is it only happening 9 days out of 365 days?
They're global events all over the world.
Why isn't there a city that's just doing this 24/7?
There's a full-time office in San Francisco, and one of the recent things they put out was that they're actually working on some countries are talking about wanting to do, like, dabble in that. So, like, that conversation has started.
Because they're precedents. Remember Drop City?
Mm-mm.
If you look at the history of California, there are all kinds of little colonies that sprouted up, people with these idealistic ideas, and they just didn't work. They just weren't sustainable. I mean, you got to pay your property taxes at the end of the day or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you have to work within the system in order to find your way out of the system.
I believe a way of, like, sidestep, like one step at a time, is, like, purchase land, pay taxes on the land, make it legal. Foot's still in reality. You still pay, you know, you own it. So you have to have a job, I think, and you have to have many people working together. One of the ways to do that is to use the land to earn money to pay the taxes. So there's lots of ways you can do that. I think that when you do that, that's like a step. And then when you have a little more autonomy, you can test. You can essentially use the scientific method and empathy and imagination to explore all of the possible ways of making life better for oneself and each other.
Hmm.
And as long as there's still a government to pay taxes to, like, you'd still have to do that. But I believe that once we build up sustainable food systems that are as automated as we want them to be, and we have networks of power grids that we build, we create our own water, you know, it's like, then when the government dies, you just kind of lift that other foot up just and just set it over into you, and then you're, like, much better off.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
Yeah. That seems viable.
Cool. Hey, a viable solution. Let's get the land.
You know, I'm sure you're not the first person with these ideas.
No. Communes generally have had that idea since the 60s. I think that you have to do it differently, which is what a lot of them say. But I think generally the measurement and the meeting of needs and having it be resource-based would be worth some study.
I agree. We're at an hour and
hour
a half.
We did it.
It's pretty good, right?
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I had another topic, but maybe we can have you back for another show sometimes.
2.0.
It's going to talk about rehearsal spaces in light of our recent.
Maybe we could talk about that for a minute.
We can talk about that briefly. It's probably not a lot of content there, but rehearsal spaces. Rehearsal spaces for music bands that get together and they want to have a place to play. So they rent out a rehearsal space, right? And usually you got to share with another band because musicians are poor.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. And so I think I've had I've been in six rehearsal spaces.
Nice.
Have
they all had some sort of butting of heads or have arguments stemmed?
You know what? No, not really. Only in a few situations.
Yeah.
Most recently.
Yeah.
Being the one that stands out. I had a studio. It was broken into. Got a bunch of shit stolen. That's not really butting of heads. That's just unfortunate. So I'm curious what your guys' experience with rehearsal spaces and, you know, cohabitation with other bands and...
This could branch into even just roommates.
Oh, my gosh. Usually it's just totally wild. I mean, I've been, I don't know, I lost count of how many rehearsal studios I've rented. I really don't know. A lot. Yeah. Probably more than 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've only done two or three. I was fortunate in the other band to have the guitarist's house. He had a garage set up, so that was sweet.
Yeah.
That was primo. We were all five of us were buddies. awesome.
So maybe bad experiences.
But bad experience,
in
yeah.
Spaces. Anybody? I mean, I had all our shit stolen, and the true tragedy of that was not that the equipment was, you know, we had two DA-38 8-track recorders. Okay, they were stolen. It sucks, but the album we were making, the tapes, were in the machines.
Gone.
And so you can't just go out and buy your album again. So it was like all the motivation just evaporated.
Yeah, that's heavy.
So I'm curious if you guys had any bad experiences in rehearsal spaces. Maybe just the worst of what you got.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think Aubrey knows. I know what you're prying at.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Give it to us.
So Aubrey and I are in a band together, rehearsal space, and another band shares the room we're in. And recently my equipment was moved by the other band without my permission, and the key broke on my piano, but they're denying it. And I honestly don't think they did it, but that's besides the point. It came up, bottom line, I think for everyone was this, you know, sense of respect. But the communication back and forth with the emails was what is probably the funniest thing about this whole thing, or frustrating. But there's some humor in it too. Yeah, I don't
know.
Yeah,
it's like there's like a huge trust. There's like a trust barrier, kind of. You know, I mean, we haven't even met those guys.
Haven't met them,
so it's hard.
And I asked, you know, well, where can I put this so it's not in your guys' way? And the question was dodged. So there was this whole communication thing that became totally blown out of proportion. And now there's just like this gray cloud. And I honestly don't want to even meet these guys, but we share a space and equipment. So it's kind of, you know, musicians are protective of their gear. But I think it can work. I think it can work well. I've seen it work before. Sharing space. It's just having rules without being anal, I think.
There was... The last two studio experiences I had were pretty rough. Like, actually, it was with Aubrey. And we tried to set my drums up in the studio he was in. And it was like, okay, we were like, I think it was like after work or something. We're like, pretty tired. We drag him out there. It takes an hour. We finally set him up. We play for some time. It was amazing fun. And then, like, that was it. We had to move. I didn't know that. But then he had to move. So then we moved to another room in the same building and set up and played once with our friend, and then my drums were moved out again.
Yeah.
And then it was like they're back in the shed in a pile, and it's like, it's really freaking hard to get space. It's difficult.
I think Orville was on the waiting list for OMC for like 2 years or something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well,
there's something like 200 plus rooms there.
Yeah.
And largest each room in the country. Is two bands or more, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been at OMC in a bunch of different rooms in that space. And I have been, oh my God, it's like 10 by 10 rooms with like three bands in them. And someone's living there too. And it's like, seriously, that's what we were practicing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
For our international listeners, OMC is the Oakland Music Complex. It's a big building.
That's cool. Largest rehearsal spaces in the country, supposedly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a cool gem that's there. There's so much music coming out of Oakland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know I didn't do justice to that question, but peace and harmony.
Peace and harmony.
Man.
Right.
Peace and harmony. It helps to know who you're rooming with.
Yeah, which we didn't going into that, but we also, you know, being that there's a 2-year waiting list, we wanted to jump on the opportunity.
Much better than our previous space.
Yeah, for sure. Great vibes all around. Good supportive bands, rehearsal space. We get to play a show there in front of other bands on Thursday.
There's a cafe in the building. There's a guitar tech in the building.
Yeah.
It's pretty
cool.
There's
a venue in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Basically two studios. They knocked out the center wall. And stage, monitors, lights, bar.
It's pretty groovy.
That's all you need.
Foosball table.
Foosball.
Foosball and pool. It's a groovy place.
Cool. Could you play anything from Giant Electric Spider? Would it be possible to maybe finish up with a little tune from you guys? Or no demo tapes, no scratch tracks?
I'd like to really thank our guest here today, Mr. Owen Dockham. Learned a lot about nutrition.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I feel fun. Like I know more now about that stuff.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, that was great. Sorry if it was a little scattered, but nutrition is a scattered topic, and anyone who tells you with confidence that there's only one way is lying or profiting.
Or both.
Most likely both.
Cool. Well, thanks to our listeners.